My name is Lieutenant Colonel Matt Sharp, and today I'm the host of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the operations group at the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, as part of NTC's Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet contributes to the profession of arms by talking to leaders from our joint force, discussing ground combat, leadership, training, and fighting at the crown jewel of our Army. Today I'm sitting down with Lieutenant Colonel John Albert, Dark Horse 6, commander of 49 Cav within 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division. John has been gracious enough to join us to reflect on experiences during the recently concluded Rotation 2602. John, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Can you start by introducing yourself and your unit to our listeners?
Lieutenant Colonel John Albert, commander, 4th Squadron, 9th Cavalry Regiment, which is the Cavalry Squadron, 2nd Armored Brigade Combat Team, Blackjack out of the 1st Team, 1st Cavalry Division. Dark Horse, reestablished spring of 2024. Been on a training glide path that's brought it here to be the 1st Cavalry Squadron and the ABCTs to transform in contact for the United States Army.
Talking about that, can you describe for our listeners sort of what 2602, first transformation in contact for an ABCT here at NTC, what did 2602 look like? What was different about it?
We tried some new organization. We did try some new material, and then we employed the new division warfighting concept as well as a squadron tactical scheme. On three areas, we were experimenting with how the cavalry squadron transforms in contact. A lot of discussion, a lot of folks will know about the multifunctional strike troop, formerly the multifunctional reconnaissance company. For this iteration, the experimentation separated the multifunctional strike troop from the cavalry squadron. So for the cavalry squadron's experimentation, we first looked at organizational design. We reformulated our traditional MTO of three cavalry troops and a tank company, keeping four troops. We developed two armored strike troops, which will look very familiar to anyone who's seen a cavalry troop. The only addition was a armored strike section. And the armored strike section brought unmanned detect and strike capability to the armored strike troop. We also developed two heavy cavalry troops. So the heavy cavalry troop was a three platoon concept. So two armored strike troops backed by two heavy cav troops was the squadron organizational design that we experimented with here. Technologically, we employed UAS, counter UAS, and some C2 systems. UAS, those armored strike sections, employed a detect, and then we started experimenting with a resupply to move material around the battlefield. On the counter UAS front, one of the heavy cav troops employed passive sensors and a active system that used electronic means to defeat UAS from observing or attacking. And then on the C2 front, not necessarily a lot of new capabilities for the Army, new to the ABCT. So the squadron employed the star shields instead of the traditional STT to give us that satellite infrastructure tie-in. Employed radios, which are able to operate across a series of waveforms. So a number of technologies to enable the squadron during this rotation. And then finally, I think the warfighting concepts. There's the division warfighting concept to restore fires and maneuver, employing capabilities to detect, suppress, finish, and enable a maneuver. And then as a squadron warfighting concept, fighting the squadron as a holistic element to concentrate combat power to set the conditions for the brigade. With the armored strike troops making initial contact unmanned, developing the situation, defeating enemy disruption and reconnaissance forces, and passing the heavy cav troops at the probable line of contact to have a decisive effect to create a condition for the brigade. So those were the three areas where the cavalry squadron was experimenting for 2602.
Okay, so on top of the standard challenges of our NTC rotation, Dark Horse Squadron was experimenting with new tech in the form of counter UAS, UAS, C2 systems, new organizations, which for you specifically look like part of a multifunctional strike troop, a contribution to that brigade level asset, and then you're testing heavy cavalry troops, armored strike troops, and then you're working as part of the 1st Cav on a new warfighting concept. So a lot going on for Dark Horse Squadron this past rotation. You happened to be here about a year ago for 2502. What did your train up look like? Did you as an organization know you were going to be a transformation and contact brigade for a long time, or how did your train up look like?
Sure. So the majority of the train up looked like most other integrated weapons strategy train up. In January, executed individual and platform services. We moved into crew gunnery in April, and May, we went through the traditional glide path of squad, section, platoon, troop live fire. A little curveball in June, selected to provide the bulk of the Bradley forces supporting the Army Birthday Parade, worked that into the scheme, and then end of June is when we got the call that we were going to be the Transformation in Contact Brigade. So we were through troop live fire by the time we received that information that we were going to be the Transformation in Contact Brigade for the Army. Coming out of block leave, we embarked on a 10-day field exercise called Pegasus Forge, brigade level FTX and CPX, where we started to work some of the concepts into the fight. The tech, though, most of that we got here at NTC, and we're able to integrate it through RSOI and the limited objective training. I think it is a testament to the Army's foundational training documents that we were able to train up on the traditional glide path and then pivot violently to embrace some new organizational design concepts and equipment and still be able to perform as a unit.
Organizationally, the testing of these new concepts really didn't start until Pegasus Forge, which is sort of mid-summer here. So just a couple months before you arrive at the end of October. Can you, just for those that are not familiar with the First Cav's WAVE concept, just sort of expand upon the way First Cav is potentially thinking about fighting, why they're trying to fight that way, and then we can talk in detail about Cav Squadron's role in that concept.
So the First Cav Division is trying to capitalize on a lot of the advancements that we've seen recently in our ability to detect and then engage across echelons to enable maneuver at the brigade level. So with the C2 networks being as capable as they are today, brigade and division is able to access echelons above brigade collect to paint a much more accurate picture of the battlefield in kind of this first wave of detect. With that understanding across echelon, the division and the brigade are then able to bring suppressive fires with precision in to create a suppressive effect on the enemy, deny him the ability to do what he wants, and then provide finishing fires with precision lethal assets that provides quite a dilemma for the enemy as he's being suppressed on one hand with fires, and then certain capabilities are being targeted and destroyed with precision fires. He is stuck as the maneuver wave is then able to close with and destroy inside of direct fire range. So it's this idea that if we're going to take this static battlefield with all of the challenges of obstacles and the advantages that the defense necessarily has from prepared positions and camouflage and the ability to prepare battle positions and engagement areas and create this fluid effect like a wave that builds and builds and builds across our ability to detect, share that information to the echelon that is most appropriate to use it, bring the most effective fires to suppress and then finish, allowing maneuver to close with destroy and actually achieve its decisive effect on the battlefield as designed. That is the First Cavalry Division warfighting concept.
Correct me if I'm wrong. What you're trying to essentially reestablish is maneuver and tempo on the modern battlefield where sensors are ubiquitous, unmanned systems are prevalent, but through this WAVE concept, we're attempting reestablish maneuver. And that WAVE concept applies at echelon, correct? So the division, the brigade, squadron, battalions, and even down to the company level or troop level, you've got the ability to sense, detect, provide some level of finishing fires, and then maneuver. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. At echelon, just as I make unmanned contact to detect, allow me to bring the mortars or request higher level fires, apply my UAS strike capability to provide some finishing precision fires to allow the squadron to maneuver. That is being replicated at echelon. The division deployed an element out here that actually fought as a wraparound element to the brigade for NTC 2602 to start working this concept and ensuring its viability at Echelon.
Can you talk about the role of Dark Horse, the squadron, the ABCT Cav Squadron, 1st Cav Division, your role in the WAVE concept, the things that Pegasus 6 has asked your squadron specifically to focus on and do?
The Cav Squadron kind of forms that bridge that enables the main body to move into the maneuver phase. What Pegasus 6 has asked is for the cavalry squadron to set a particular condition on the battlefield that inform, protects, or fights for the main body. That could be to attack to seize a piece of key terrain, attack to fix enemy force, or provide something more like a traditional guard or security mission to enable the brigade to employ its combat power, maximizing that economy of force effect that the cavalry squadron provides, and bridging the suppressive and fires effects with the decisive maneuver of the combined arms battalions.
I mean, that's what I heard the Blackjack team talking a lot about: informing, protecting, fighting for the main body, serving as an economy of force. And we saw that play out in multiple places. In your mind, what's different about that concept? In some ways, that those are very traditional roles of cavalry squadron. Other places we saw there's some new things. What stood out to you about 2602, perhaps against 2502, in terms of how you fought your squadron, how you saw things play out over the last 14 days?
The observation I had was that in its traditional reconnaissance model, we have a tendency to disperse the cavalry squadron and make contact across a very broad front, which puts immense pressure on platoon leaders and troop commanders to successfully make, develop, and win first contact. And with the battlefield as it is, with own ability to detect, to prepare defensive positions, and their greater familiarity with the terrain, in most cases, direct fire overmatch, where they are able to engage me at a greater range than I can engage them, that concept did not make a lot of sense to me anymore. That the squadron needed to be able to maximize its ability to employ combined arms, which meant troops working together on a narrower front to achieve a specific condition. So we would still do the advanced guard mission, but instead of a brigade frontage, we would be targeted on a portion of the brigade frontage to pass a particular combined arms battalion or to have a particular effect on a specific piece of key terrain, instead of getting broadly distributed and being less effective about setting specific conditions for the brigade. So I think once we took the shackles off of thinking about security as getting as broad as possible and providing every bit of information across the entire front edge, I think that allowed us to explore the cavalry squadron as a much more effective combined arms force at setting specific conditions. Like a boxer's jab, the cavalry squadron on a narrow front being effective as a combined arms force forces the op four to think and respond, keeps the initiative with the brigade, and provides that security without kind of penny packeting the cavalry squadron across the battlefield.
Yeah, and I think what you saw, Dark Horse was rarely spread out. We had no one in the north and central corridors, much more a shorter battle space, fighting largely as a squadron. You had some different tactical tasks in your mission statements than what we sometimes see here.
Yeah. So the first mission, it was effectively an advance guard to seize key terrain and then pass a combined arms battalion onto the flank of the enemy. Having successfully done that, the brigade then realized an opportunity. We were tasked to, again, attack to seize another piece of key terrain, which freed up two combined arms battalions to attack in other directions. The third mission set was an area defense. The ability of the Cav Squadron to execute that area defense effectively provided the brigade commander options to continue the attack in other areas of the battlefield. And then finally, the final battle was an attack to fix. The squadron was able to fix two mechanized infantry battalions, allowing the other three combined arms battalions to maneuver to a position of advantage. Not the typical zone reconnaissance into a screen, certainly passed through various security operations, did area reconnaissances as part of the operation, but the purposes and tactical tasks that the brigade assigned were certainly not the traditional ones assigned to the cavalry squadron.
I had some leaders, we talked about this, is you saw yourself in many ways as Big S. So when we talk about Big S and little r, we're referring to security and reconnaissance. Big on security, less reconnaissance. What does that mean sort of to Dark Horse, to yourself now having done that? How do you see Big S, little r? How did that play out? What are your thoughts on that?
I think first, r is not going away, right? There are times when you're still going to need manned reconnaissance to go and find something out. Because I can see an enemy force doesn't tell me if he's ready to fight, doesn't tell me his intention to fight. Reconnaissance in force is still going to be a very real thing. Still going to be a need for an all-weather reconnaissance capability. And then there's terrain and civil reconnaissance. You got to go and put eyeballs or boots on a piece of terrain to determine it's not a bog, you know, that the bridge will hold, or that the human intelligence that you're getting is real. So I don't think R will still always be part of the cavalry squadron's kit. We traditionally think of ourselves as an R and S organization. I think those need to be flipped. I think there's a lot of capabilities now available to brigade and division commanders, provided by a robust C2 architecture and this profusion of sensors. The question is something like, where will the enemy defend? Is it forward, back? Is he going to conduct a mobile defense? There's just more efficient, effective ways to get that information. So I think a lot of the R burden is getting shifted toward the unmanned, toward the fusion of intelligence across echelons to enable a brigade commander to know how to employ his combat power. On the other hand, the S has gotten a lot harder. It's a lot harder to protect your information. It's a lot harder to protect your intentions, because you also have to do things that the enemy can now detect. When's he resupplying? Where is he massing? So the S becomes that much more important to be able to apply on the battlefield. The cavalry squadron's ability to provide some element of that protection of information and of combat power to the brigade commander, I think now is that much more important. Given the bend of technology, I think, yes, the security missions and the ability to conduct tactical tasks that inform, protect, and fight for the main body of the brigade are going to be more important in the CAV squadron's kit going forward, with the reconnaissance ability there, just not the primary thing that the cavalry squadron is going to bring to the maneuver battlefield.
So as you've tested the new kit, tried warfighting concepts at the end of 2602, in your mind, what are some sustains for Dark Horse? What are some things you're going to work on going home? And what are some things that maybe you just don't have enough data, or you've got to think about and really not yet able to make a decision on or opinion on?
The home station training worked. All of our field exercises were conducted at night, very aggressive driver's training program. We fought through all of the rollover hotspots here at NTC. Very proud of the engaged NCO and junior officer leadership and the driver's training that we did at home station. And I would say the same with the crew lethality training. It paid off. In fights, crews were engaged, they bore sighted, and they were hitting their targets. That was all home station things that absolutely were part of every unit's training glide path that worked here very well. I think the squadron's fighting scheme worked. I was very conservative in its application, being very sure that I had a read of the enemy set before I loosened the ability of the troop commanders to kind of develop the situation on their own. I wanted to take off the table kind of headlong cavalry charge into the engagement area that sees us, you know, wiped out and all hanging back at the UMCP. May have been even too conservative about ensuring that the cavalry squadron fought as a cohesive unit. But overall, I think the scheme works. Enabled me and the troop commanders to apply sufficient combat power where it was needed so that we never really got in this regeneration loop of how many Bradleys can you get forward in the next 6 hours? How many can you come up? We were able to win enough fights and keep the pressure on the enemy where the op four was kind of in that regeneration cycle. Not everything went well. I think with this much greater access of higher information about what they're seeing deep on the battlefield, I don't think I was very effective at passing and painting that picture down to the troops to enable them to adjust their scheme of maneuver. So I think we're going to go and work on command post discipline and battle drills, staying on battle rhythm so that we can better enable the troops to understand the fight, ease some of the burden on the sustainment. I think the other thing that jumped out to me, we're coming off the RStruck decisions to bring down the SBCT and IBCT scouts, and many 19 Deltas joined with this idea of the scout in the woodline, OP on the hill. And as the big S kind of takes foremost role in the warfighting life of the scout. So I think we will need to go back and work to understand the awesomeness that is a scout platoon able to mass anti-tank and M242 fires to enable a other scout platoon to maneuver on the battlefield. Infiltration tactics will, of course, always be part of the scout's kit. I think we need to work some of those more basic maneuver muscles that we are absolutely capable of executing, which I think we have like kind of an identity, is this what I do thing that we're going to have to work through. I see some tactical decision exercises with the senior scouts and platoon leaders in the future, and then getting in the CCTT so we can actually work the maneuver muscles that the tank platoons just have in spades. But the scout platoons are kind of learning, yeah, this is a thing that I can do and do well.
One sort of last thematic question for you. Brigade Asset is the multifunctional strike troop, becoming more established certainly within our MBCTs, but still playing with that concept here in the ABCTs. You guys went with the strike troop. Can you just describe what multifunctional strike troop is designed to do, sort of how it's organized, sort of how it's led, any struggles or things that you think we might need to still think about as an army as we continue to develop that?
So the multifunctional strike troop took the basic idea of the armored strike section, which is make unmanned contact first at the tempo and depth that a brigade, armor brigade combat team would need to enable its offensive operations. So it organized with two unmanned platoons, which had a detect capability and then a strike capability, deeper range than were part of my armored strike sections, an electronic warfare platoon to provide that information collection capability to the brigade in kind of this transition area between where division assets would be picking up kind of at that CFL moving forward and where the battalion and cavalry squadron's assets ensure that there was no gap in reconnaissance handover and they're developing the situation for the brigade commander. Out here experimenting and finding out what does and doesn't work at scale when the operator is tired. I think the concept of the MFST is roughly the same. Give the brigade an ability to make unmanned contact first, to develop the situation and understand what's going on so that it can bring the field artillery battalion in to provide suppressive fires for the brigade to enable maneuver. Within the MFST, it would have strike elements that would provide those finishing fires. I think looking at their mission set, their mission sets were mostly R, and then mostly fires. Integrating with the cavalry squadron, it certainly is a logical integration of inform and protect, but it's not necessarily going to occur at the same place on the battlefield. So we talked about the cavalry squadron being applied on a narrower front that might be on the flank. The MFST might be applied on the exact opposite flank of the battlefield because that's where the brigade commander really needs to understand the battle, or he needs to enable a battalion to be able to do something decisive. So I think it was an interesting experimentation of separating by purpose the multifunctional strike troop from the cavalry squadron to enable the brigade to maintain its reconnaissance capability in that unmanned print while providing a pretty significant security effect on the battlefield.
It's an interesting concept and, you know, really impressive to see how Blackjack and the squadron employed them and continue to grow. Fortunately, I think that's probably where we'll wrap up our conversation. Dark Horse Squadron did an outstanding job here in Blackjack at large. We learned a lot, and we're appreciative of the opportunity to serve alongside you and watch some of the things that you're doing for the Army. So again, I wanted to thank Lieutenant Colonel John Albert for your time. It was our pleasure to host you and your team for Rotation 2602. I invite you to look at our latest products, subscribe to our TAC Talk for quick hitting lessons. Thanks for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by the Warrior Chronicles here at the National Warfighting Training Center. Train the force, lead, train, win.